good evening. Welcome to our planning and development portion of this evening. Today is Wednesday, September 11, 2013. We have all supervisors and our two Lutheran governors present this evening. Staff, we also have Andy Bueller and April Webb. We'll go ahead and get our meeting started. Item number six is a rezoning with David C. and Pamela M. Geiger of Salem, PO Box 13, Wilmot, Wisconsin, 53192. Owner requests rezoning from R8 Urban Two Family Residential District to R4 Urban Single Family Residential District on part of tax parcel number 67-4-120-303-0145. Located in the southwest one quarter of section 30 in the town of Salem. Mr. Geiger. Please come forward. You'll have to push the middle button on the microphone. State your name and address for the record and tell us why you're here tonight.
My name is Dave Geiger, and the reason I would like to rezone my lots in the rear would be to increase my backyard and my personal residence.
Okay.
I don't plan on putting a building or anything there. I just want to make my backyard larger.
Okay. Ready, do you have any questions? Is there anyone to speak in favor of this petition? Anyone in favor?
Oh, sorry. Other than the building that's there now, are you going to put more? I didn't get a chance to get up there and look at it.
Anyone to speak against the petition? Anyone against? Andy from the town?
The town board of Salem met on this item on September 9th, 2013, and the motion carried unanimously.
Andy, do you need to say when things were published?
Chris, thank you. Yeah, and for all items tonight, the items were published as a Class 2 notice on August 29, 2013 and September 3, 2013 as a Class 2 notice that is required and is published in the Kenosha News.
Thank you, Andy.
I make a motion to approve the rezoning.
Second.
I have a first by Supervisor Decker and a second by Supervisor Spilitsky. Lutheran Governments?
Aye.
Aye. Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Your rezoning has been approved.
Thank you.
Item number seven is a conditional use permit for Wisconsin Electric Power Company in Harris. This is DBA Energies, 231 West Michigan Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53201. Owner, Richard O'Connor, B Energies, 231 West Michigan Street, Milwaukee, Wisconsin, 53201. Agent, requesting to amend a conditional use permit to install two standby diesel generators and auxiliary equipment at an existing electric generating plant on tax parcel number 45-4-221-041-0220, located in the
generators at the Paris Generating Station. The purpose for these diesel generators is to provide backup power for starting the gas turbines in the event of loss of power at the site. These diesel generators will be equipped. They will come in existing enclosures. So they'll be sound attenuated. There'll be baffles on the inlets, silencers on the exhaust to keep the noise sound limits within.
Thank you. Are there any questions from the committee? Supervisor Raymond?
Why did you go with diesel and not natural gas for the generators?
There is a potential, if you have an electric outage, an expensive electric outage, there's electric compressors on some of the natural gas stations, so you may not have natural gas.
Okay.
Diesel is self-contained.
It's there.
It's there.
Great, thank you.
Any other questions? Anyone to speak in favor of this petition? Anyone in favor? Anyone against this petition? Anyone against? Andy from the town?
At the town board of Paris on August 27, 2013, they met and the motion passed 3-0.
I make a motion to approve the conditional use permit for the conditions.
Have you read the conditions and you're
used to
them? I have a first by Supervisor Decker and a second by Supervisor Underhill. You think government?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Your conditional use permit has been granted. Thank you.
Thank you.
Sure.
understand what I'm saying and answer that in a second. So basically, that's what I'm here for, is to get the zone to conditional, get the conditional use requirement. I have to have more commercial land. And I own all the land around this building. I'm its nearest neighbor. I filled out a form. Maybe you can see we are very big geek. My dad is the state of Wisconsin. Have a 4 mile radius. This would not be a clinic, referral clinic. This would be new ambulatory. We go to the farms. We do have an occasional horse comes in, but it normally goes back home that morning if it does come in. The most we've ever had is maybe two or three trailers in the morning in the spring. So that's why I'm here. If you have questions.
Thank you. Are there any questions? Anyone in favor? Anyone against this petition? Anyone against? Andy from the town?
The town board of Salem met on this item on September 9th, 2013, and the motion carried unanimously.
I make a motion to approve the comprehensive plan amendment.
Second.
I will move you first by Supervisor Decker and a second by Supervisor Skolinski. This is a comp plan change. This will require a roll call vote. Emily?
Aye.
Ashton?
Aye.
Supervisor Underhill?
Aye.
Supervisor Decker?
Aye.
Supervisor Dodge?
Aye.
Supervisor Skolinski?
Aye.
And the chair votes aye. Your time is done.
Thank you.
Number 9 is a tabled final condominium plat, North Beach LLC, Reuben and Randall. Do you have a motion to remove this from the table?
I make a motion to remove it from the table.
Second.
I have a first by Supervisor Decker and a second by Supervisor Skolinski, Youth and Governance.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. This item has been removed from the table. This is the tabled final plat of North Beach Condominium, North Beach LLC, 918 South School Street, Mount Prospect, Illinois, 60058, owner. Michael Partridge, 918 South School Street, Mount Prospect, Illinois, 60058, agent. Parcels number 95-4-119-074-0973 and number 60-4-119-181-0433. Located in the southeast one quarter of section 7 in the town of Wheatland and the northeast quarter of section 18 in the town of Randall. Mr. Partridge. That's okay. Please state your name and address for the record and tell us why you're here tonight.
My name is Tony Partridge. I'm on Nasal School Street on Prospect, Illinois, 60056. I'm here to see final plat approval for the North Beach.
Do we have any questions from the committee?
Yeah, I got one.
Supervisor.
Sorry. On the pets, is there a limit? I see it just says I can find it. Rules and regulations.
So I'm assuming that would be with the townships, with the county?
Yeah, that would be with the county as well, is that they're, you're allowed up to no more than five dogs or cats total.
Or does Randall and Lynn have anything stricter?
Unless they have something specific.
Okay, I didn't know if there was anything in Brady, somewhere else.
I'm just assuming that we go with this. Well, I have a portion of Randall, so we probably have to go along with whatever the stipulations are with the townships.
Right, if anything is more restrictive than the county in the town of Wheatland, because all the units will be in the town of Wheatland.
Thank you.
Any other questions? Anyone to speak in favor of this petition? Anyone in favor? Anyone against this petition? Anyone against? Andy from the town?
The Wheatland Town Board met on this on July 22nd, and the matter was approved. The Town of Randall Town Board met on this on August 22nd, 2013, and the motion carried for that one as well.
Thank you, Andy.
I make a motion to approve the final condominium plat.
Second.
I have a first by Supervisor Decker and a second by Supervisor Skoletsky. Youth and Governance?
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. Your plat has been approved. Thank you.
This item has been tabled due to the petitioner's request, due to the fact that the stormwater pond, it was shown to be a wetland area, and so the multi-jurisdictional committee met the other week and took up the issue in regards to stormwater ponds throughout the county, and to have those changed from that status. And with that, we will have to have that yearly report approved by this committee in a month, and then when it is approved by the county board, that matter will be taken care of, and this petition can then move forward. I guess we are working on making contact with Mr. Bodner so he's aware of the timing on this, so that he can work out his arrangements to have this matter begin again at the town of Summers. And at this point, we're anticipating that this should come back up with an amended request to take into account this change in November.
Thank you, Andy. Number 11 is the review and possible approval of a resolution. This is a request to endorse the Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission Regional Housing Plan for Southeastern Wisconsin 2035. We have Nancy Washburn from Sewer Path here to... Nancy Henderson from Sewer Path here to give a brief presentation.
Sorry.
Housing plan.
plan was adopted by our regional commission in March. It's an element of the regional comprehensive plan, so the housing element in effect of our regional comprehensive plan. And it updates a housing plan that was adopted in 1975. We had a 29-member advisory committee for the plan. Andy served on the committee and George Melcher before him. There were reps from each of the counties, several of the communities in the region, builders, realtors, policy groups, universities, and also the Fair Housing Council and Independence First, which represents people with disabilities. So a pretty broad spectrum of housing interest on the committee. Early in the process, the committee adopted a vision for housing in the region, and that was to basically provide a good distribution of affordable housing throughout the region. And as we get into the recommendations, the focus of the plan was to increase affordable housing in areas that have job centers, and also the focus was on providing additional affordable housing in areas that provide sewer service, sanitary sewer service. The committee also developed 8 plan objectives, which I'll talk about as we get more into the plan recommendations, but there are basically are 6 major topics that were addressed in the plan, and the recommendations fall under those 6 topics. I'm just going to go through some of the major analyses and findings that we made as part of the plan. And the first was to identify what's meant by affordable housing. And we went with the standard that's used by HUD, the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development, that a household should spend no more than 30% of its income on housing costs. And that includes rent or mortgage and also property insurance, property taxes, and utilities. And banks generally use this 30% as well. They actually go to 28 to 30% when they're reviewing mortgage applications. So that standard is pretty widely accepted. Obviously, if you make $1 million, 30% of your income is a lot more than a household $25,000 or $50,000. So the focus of the plan is really on households that are considered low and moderate income. So making below the median income for the region. It's just over a third of households in the region, 36%. Currently spend more than 30% of their income on housing. So those households are considered to have a housing cost burden. It's 37% in Kenosha County, so very close to the region average. And most of those incomes those households that have a housing cost burden are households that have incomes below the median household income of about $54,000. We also, as part of the plan, analyzed the cost of developing new housing and the likely monthly cost for that housing, and then compared it with household incomes throughout the region, and generally determined that households with incomes that are less than half of the median income, so less than about $27,000 a year, by and large, those households are going to need some type of subsidy to be able to afford housing at 30% or less of their income. So that's about a quarter of the households in the region, or 187,000 households. Households that make between 50 and 80% of median income, so between $27,000 to $43,000 a year, they should be able to afford market-rate multifamily housing, so housing that's developed by private developers with no type of government subsidy. Households at more medium or moderate incomes should be able to afford market rate single-family housing that's of higher density, so quarter acre lots or smaller, and household and home sizes of about 1,200 square feet. And the remaining 36% of region households make more than 135% of median income, so the private market satisfies their need for housing at rates and costs that they can afford. We also looked at the need, the existing supply and potential need for subsidized and tax credit housing, and that's either housing that's developed by public housing agencies or households that receive, that live in privately developed apartments but receive a Section 8 voucher to help them meet housing costs at 30% or less of their income. There's currently about 46,000 subsidized housing units and vouchers available within the region. But there, we estimate about 187,000 households with a potential need for a housing voucher or a public housing unit. And all of the public housing authorities that administer vouchers in the region, they all have quite long waiting lists, usually on the order of 4,000 to 5,000 or more households on their waiting list, usually at least a three-year waiting list before they close them. So there is a significant unmet need for additional housing vouchers or subsidized housing units in our region. We also looked at all the zoning regulations adopted by communities that have sewer service in the region, because the plan recommends more multifamily housing and higher density single family housing to provide housing that's affordable to lower and moderate income households. So these two maps, the map on the left summarizes whether community zoning ordinances would permit the higher density single family housing. Those in green, there are no requirements in the zoning ordinance that would prohibit the higher density housing from being developed. The ones that are red, shown in red, their regulations do not allow the higher density or the smaller home sizes that were recommended, or the modest home sizes we're recommending. And then the blue, the 10,000 square foot or smaller lot sizes are permitted, and not permitted, and the orange, the 1,200 square foot or smaller home sizes are not permitted. So there are a number of communities in the region that have some type of zoning restrictions on higher density single and multifamily and or multifamily. We also looked at minority population distribution in the region, and African American populations are largely concentrated in Milwaukee County and the city of Milwaukee itself, and also in the city of Racine. The blue areas on this map indicate census tracts where the minority population is higher than the average minority population in the region, which is 29%. The census tracts in the outlying counties that have higher than average minority concentrations generally are Hispanic populations. The incomes of minority residents are significantly lower than white households. African American households average about 50% of white household incomes, and Hispanic households about 60% of white household incomes. So minority households generally have a more difficult time finding housing that's affordable to them. Another major analysis we did as part of the plan was we analyzed all of the comprehensive plans. Oh, I'm sorry.
I wasn't sure if I did it. The Would you guys do any analysis of where the discrepancy of why it existed or, you know, the...
The income discrepancy?
Yeah.
No, we didn't.
Okay,
no.
Just kind of it's a number that was there, not really why it's there.
Correct, right.
Thank you.
The job housing balance, again, that was a major analysis. We looked at all the comprehensive plans adopted by communities with sewer service in the region. And we focused on communities that have sanitary sewer service because without sanitary sewer service, typically communities that don't have sewer service don't have a lot of job locations in them. They're pretty small and scattered. And also, they simply can't accommodate the higher density multifamily and single family housing that we're recommending. So we focused on sewer communities because generally that's where the jobs are and that's where the higher density housing is going to go. We analyzed the comprehensive plans to see how much land was set aside for commercial, industrial, and institutional land. So basically, land uses that would accommodate jobs, and then how much land was set aside for residential development and at what densities, and apply some percentages and income levels from 2010 to categorize percentages of jobs in lower wage, moderate wage, and higher wage in each community, and potential housing costs into lower cost, moderate cost, and higher cost, and then compare them. So this map summarizes communities where we think, based on our analysis, there'll be a shortage of lower cost housing compared to lower wage jobs. That's in the blue. The orange is we expect or we project a shortage of moderate cost housing to moderate wage jobs. And the area shown in red, we think there'll be likely a shortage of both lower cost and moderate cost housing in relation to lower and moderate wage jobs. And then the communities in green, we think that they'll be relatively, have a good balance between their housing costs and the wages paid to people who work at jobs in those communities. We also looked at,
from the analysis, obviously taking a look at projected shortages of moderate low-priced homes, did it also, part of that projection, do the low to moderate paying jobs or opportunities currently exist, or they don't exist in those areas right now? I don't know if I'm asking the question correctly.
No, you're basically asking how about in 2010, what is the balance or
do the low moderate jobs exist in these areas where, of course, there is not that housing, or was that something that was kind of the assumption you guys had to make?
There is, right now, there are communities that have lower moderate wage jobs without lower moderate cost housing being provided.
And is that projected on this map here?
No, this map is 2035 based on the comprehensive plans. We did do a separate analysis that's in the plan report that looked at 2010. So it took the jobs and the wages and then an estimate of housing costs based on 2010. So there is a similar comparison that was done for 2010.
So you look at 2010 and extrapolate forward.
No, there were actually two different analyses. 2010 was used existing data, and the 2035 analysis was based on the comprehensive plans adopted by each community. So two separate analyses looking at one, a current picture or 2010 picture, and then one, a future picture based on comprehensive plans.
Okay, what's kind of in place and what they're hoping for in those areas? So,
right.
I mean, it always has to be something you know can predict the future, so you have to make some assumptions. Okay.
Correct, yes. And as I mentioned, there are some communities that have lower wage and moderate wage jobs without the lower cost and moderate cost housing now. So one way to link areas that may not have suitable housing now is to provide transit to get people from areas where there is affordable housing out to job locations. So this map shows in the red shades show existing job locations, and then the blue areas are areas where there is public transit available, and then there's the blue line showing the commuter buses that connect to job locations. So the basis of this really was to show that there are a number of jobs in the region that currently aren't served by public transit. Although Kenosha County really does the best job of connecting areas of job locations to residential areas through both the Western Kenosha Transit System and the city system. There really are just some locations in Pleasant Prairie where that are currently not transit accessible. In the balance of the region, though, there are particularly Walworth County and Washington County, there are a number of job locations that aren't accessible by transit currently. Accessible housing, so housing for people with disabilities was another big topic that we addressed in the plan. Currently, well, since the early 90s, fair housing laws have required that new multifamily development has some basic accessibility features like zero-step entrances and wider doorways and hallways. So most of the supply of accessible housing is multifamily housing. There are currently no requirements that single or two-family housing have any kind of accessibility features unless the owner requests them from the builder or retrofits their house to include them. So we estimate that there are about 62,000 accessible multifamily units in the region as of 2010. But the 2010 census, 169,000 households reported that they have a person with a disability in their household. So again, the demand for accessible units is quite a bit higher than the supply. And because the baby boomer generation is now moving into 65-plus year category and disabilities, the percentage of disabilities increases as the population increases. We expect that there'll be an additional demand for housing that's accessible to people with disabilities in the coming years.
With the number of disabled people that you quoted, or people with disabilities, did you extrapolate out the people that have physical disabilities that need a house that is accessible versus people that have other disabilities that it wouldn't matter if their house was accessible or not?
No, we weren't able to do that. And the American Housing Survey that's conducted as part of the census just started in the year 2011 to collect information on single family homes that are accessible to people with disabilities. And then the American Community Survey will start having that more detailed information that we need. In 2013, so we didn't have all the information we needed to make a real good comparison when we did the plan. So we can only focus on the multifamily housing and the households that reported a member with a disability. Could narrow down to physical disabilities.
Okay, that would make a big difference.
Yes, right. Yeah, and we, you know, there's obviously people who have cognitive, and you have dressing, all sorts of different disabilities that aren't necessarily mobility disabilities.
Thank you.
You know, obviously, when you need to make a resident accessible to physically disabled people, there's a cost associated with that, and it's usually not that cost reduction. Did that get factored into when you are asking folks, or they're recommending those types of things, how it impacts the cost of low to moderate? You know, and so does that result in a bigger subsidy, or is that put into a different category?
Well, by and large, the low and moderate income housing we're recommending is largely multifamily, and because now the state and federal fair housing laws require multifamily housing to be accessible, if we can increase the supply of multifamily housing, we'll also be increasing the supply of housing that's accessible to people with disabilities. So it's addressed that way. We didn't really factor it into the cost of single family housing, although one thing we did do is we started with a recommendation for a home size of 1,100 square feet, and then we worked on floor plans, and we found that you just couldn't provide a home that's accessible at 1,100 square feet. We had to bump it up to 1,200 square feet. So we do have a floor plan in our model floor plan in our board that is accessible, a single family home that's accessible, but it's 1,200 square feet.
It's still considered a low to moderate?
Yes. So we're finally at the plan recommendation section. I was going to highlight some of our key recommendations, and they're in the six major topic areas. The first, affordable housing. And the key recommendation of the entire plan really is directed to cities, towns, and villages that have sewer service. And we recommend that those communities provide areas for the development of multifamily housing and higher density single family housing through their comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances. The third one down there is also important, that communities, we recommend communities review their requirements for new housing, so subdivision and zoning ordinances, to see if they can reduce costs without affecting quality. And the main area of focus there was street widths in subdivision ordinances. A lot of times communities require pretty wider than needed street widths, which are expensive for the subdivider to develop, and those are passed on to the purchasers of homes and lots in the subdivision. So that's one area where communities can help to decrease the cost of housing.
With regards to those narrow streets, did you take into consideration emergency vehicle access along those lines?
Yes, there is a table in the report, and based on research that was done through our transportation division at SewerPAC, so it considers things like snow removal and storage and emergency vehicles and buses, which
schools
primarily use collector and arterial streets. But yes, that was considered.
Schools also? For schools. Additional schools for the children, is that factored into the cost?
Schools. Not specifically. And there actually is a recommendation in the plan that the state take a closer look at shared revenue and the use of property taxes to fund schools, because that definitely is a big concern of local officials. And part of the reason some local officials prefer to see larger houses and larger lots is because they cost more, the property values are higher, and the property taxes are higher, and that helps support local government, and that helps support the school district. So it does, to some extent, definitely affects thinking when local governments are reviewing flats and housing proposals. And that had a lot of discussion by our advisory committee, the need to try and take more of the cost burden off the property taxes, so local officials would feel more comfortable allowing lower-cost housing in their communities.
If you would take it off the property taxes, where would you place it?
Well, we didn't make any recommendations there.
So you just said, take it off there, no, but no, you don't know where to place it?
The recommendation ended up that the state should establish a task force to look at options for decreasing property taxes and shifting the school cost burden off property taxes.
Okay.
And there was talk about, you know, what should we actually recommend something, and then they said, no, that's not for this committee, but it definitely is an issue that needs to be addressed. And then the last one on this page, establish programs and ordinances to maintain existing affordable housing stock. That also was, we got a lot of comments that existing housing in a community tends to be the more affordable housing, or, you know, as compared to new housing, and that there is a need to provide funding to properly maintain housing. And Kenosha County is right now, other than Milwaukee and Kenosha County does have a program that provides funding for low and moderate income households for home improvements. So you're ahead of a lot of other counties in having that funding available.
What do you consider, or what does SOAR PAC consider affordable housing stock? Is there parameters, or is it different for each community, or based on jobs,
well,
and medium income, or?
It's tough because it's based on median income.
So each area is different?
Yes.
Okay. But it's based on median income and a 30% for property taxes, mortgage, utilities, based on that?
That's correct.
Okay, so for example, Mequon would be, their affordable housing stock would most likely be higher, more expensive than, say, down in Kenosha.
That's correct.
Okay, so it is adjustable. Okay.
Yes, it is. And we, there is a table that has the levels for each county.
Okay, thank you.
And moving on to the job housing balance recommendations. Again, the key recommendation in this section is directed to Seward communities, and we recommend that. Really, the recommendation is that each Seward community take a look at their job housing balance when they update their comprehensive plans and change their plans if needed and some ordinances so their housing will be affordable to the workforce they're planning, the type of jobs they're planning for their communities. And there are also a couple of recommendations regarding the establishment of TIF districts in the state. This would be another recommendation that will be up to the state to implement to conduct a state job housing balance analysis and consider whether communities have a balance when they award economic development incentives and in the formation of TIF districts. And under subsidized and tax credit housing, the plan recommends that communities that have a major employment center, and those are identified in our regional land use plan, and they're major employment centers, and those have job concentrations of 3,500 or more people. So Kenosha County has five major employment centers in Kenosha and Pleasant Prairie. And we recommend that those communities seek tax credit funds from the state, which are awarded by the state, to provide housing for lower and moderate income households, workforce housing. The plan also recommends the establishment of a regional housing trust fund to assist in the acquisition of land for affordable housing. Currently, the City of Milwaukee and Milwaukee County have housing trust funds that are used to provide gap funding when there's
a shortage of available funding from other sources, usually other grant sources. So we're recommending that other communities in the region establish similar trust funds or join in with Milwaukee and make a larger regional housing trust fund. And lastly, we recommend that the public housing authorities in the region work with HUD to try and establish a regional housing voucher program. Fair housing opportunity was another topic area.
What does, I'm looking at the last bullet point, what does work with HUD to remove financial disincentives for establishment of a regional Section 8 housing voucher program? What does that mean, removing those financial disincentives?
Right now, there's a number. The city of Milwaukee has a housing authority, City of Waukesha. So there's 8 different public housing authorities in the region, and they each have an allotted number of vouchers that they administer. And HUD provides them with administrative funding. I don't know the exact number, but for the first 1,000 vouchers, let's say they get enough money to hire a person and set up a computer system, so they get a fairly substantial chunk of money. And then for each additional 1,000 housing vouchers, they get less money, because they assume, well, you already have a computer system and a person. So if all the 8 public housing authorities were to combine their vouchers, they would actually get less administrative money from HUD to administer vouchers regionally than they do now when they've got 8 separate authorities. So, and apparently it's enough of a financial loss that it's been an impediment for the 8 authorities to join together to try and streamline their voucher administration.
Okay, thank you.
It's a long answer, but.
Thank you, I have no idea what that meant.
Under fair housing, the key point under here is that providing additional multifamily and modest single family housing throughout the region would help address fair housing. It would provide opportunities for minority households to be able to afford housing in the outlying portions of the region where there are job opportunities that they currently they can't afford the housing near those job centers, and there may not be transit for them to get to those jobs. So improving the distribution of affordable housing throughout the region would help address the fair housing issue in the region. And accessible housing, that's the last of the 6. And again, other plan recommendations, the recommendations for more multifamily housing around the region, which is currently required to be accessible to people with mobility disabilities, would increase the supply of accessible housing in the region. And then that second bullet point is, as I alluded to earlier, American Housing Survey data, which was not available at the time we did the plan, that could help communities estimate the demand for accessible housing in their community, and then they could prioritize their HUD funding, block grant, and home funding to assist households with making the remodeling that they need to single family homes to improve accessibility. In conclusion, we've sent the plan out to each of the county and local governments in the requested that they endorse the plan and consider using the plan when they update their local and county comprehensive plans and zoning ordinances. The plan would do a number of things, help support economic development in the region by encouraging affordable housing or housing that's affordable to the workforce in the region. To address the problem of dilapidated housing in the region by making safe housing more affordable to households. In other words, removing the quote-unquote demand for dilapidated housing, because now that's all that's
some households can afford. They can't afford decent housing. To better meet the need for accessible housing in the region, to reinforce the need for improved public transit in the region to link areas of existing affordable housing to job centers, and lastly, to help increase diversity in the region. Thank you for your time.
In the affordable point, just to reinforce the need for expanding public transit in the region, would that not fall under the...
Mike, can you pull it closer? We can hardly hear you.
Would that fall under the transportation plan, if you would? Or why was it included that we reside here? Is it due to that idea? Or what was the basis for that decision?
Really, just because we currently do have areas that have pretty substantial stocks of affordable housing, but they also have high unemployment. And the thought was if there were better links between those existing concentrations of affordable housing and jobs, we could help improve the existing affordable housing stock because people would then have the incomes to better maintain their homes.
Was there any thought to give it to maybe a triennial or annual subsidy? But is there any place where maybe a pilot is going on where rather than just region-wide, it's been tried and proven that it's successful, that if you lay in some additional public transit, that indeed we start seeing unemployment drop or it utilized, because so many times I see public transit, it's empty.
No,
any discussion about that at all?
No, there was
okay.
None about that.
Yesterday we were discussing the baby boomers moving from their larger, let's say, homes and wanting smaller homes. And that was one thing that I asked. So that was addressed in the plan, that's a need, smaller homes for like the aging population. Was it addressed of what happens to those homes when we're building new homes for the baby boomers? And they're moving out of those larger homes. What happens to those larger homes? Do we have a population need to move into those? Or will there be such a glut of them that then the values of the homes across the region will?
We didn't look at that directly, but we still, even though the rate of population growth is slowing, there is still population growth, a 17% population growth. Projected for the region. So there should be other households, younger households, that can move into those homes that are being vacated by the retiring or baby boom population.
And have we looked, is when the baby boom population starts to die off, it will happen.
Mm-hmm.
Have we looked that far into the future to see what happens? Do we have the population growth to replace them as they ceased?
It's interesting that you mentioned that because we did sort of have it. We're currently working on an update to the regional land use and transportation plans now, and there is projected to be a need for some more in-migration into the region to fill available jobs. So there is some concern that our population isn't growing as fast as it had been, and there will be a need to try and attract people to the region to help fill the jobs that we have in the region. So the thought is that by providing the affordable housing stock, we're promoting our region. It's something to attract people to our region to come and move to our region.
But it hasn't been addressed at all. I haven't thought about that.
No. It's just kind of a red flag or a concern that the population isn't growing naturally as fast as it had been. And there is going to be a need to try and attract more people to the region. And the focus has been on to fill our jobs. not so much to take the housing units to absorb the housing staff. But if they come for the jobs, they'll absorb the housing staff.
Thank you. Any other questions? Thank you, Nancy.
Thank you.
Okay, before us is the resolution to endorse the Southeastern Wisconsin Regional Planning Commission Regional Housing Plan for Southeastern Wisconsin 2035.
I make a motion to approve the resolution.
Second.
I have a first by Supervisor Decker and a second by Supervisor Dodge. Anything else? Committee?
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The resolution has been approved.
Thank you.
Thanks, Nancy.
I'll sit here just in case there's any questions, although John Nealon probably talked to you about this agenda item.
For the next one, number 12 is review and possible approval of the resolutions for requests to provide funding for the cost of acquiring properties in the Fox River floodplain. We had a very lengthy discussion about this yesterday. Does anyone have any questions?
Second.
Yeah, but your mic's always on, isn't it?
You're so good at it.
So there you go.
No, it's her mic.
Yeah, it is. I watched for the light.
No, mine isn't. I have a first by Supervisor Decker, and who would like to second?
Dodge.
Supervisor Dodge. Second by Supervisor Dodge. Youth and Government.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. The resolution has been approved.
Did the youth and government ever turn their microphones on like me?
No, they do not turn their microphones
on.
It always comes.
Number 12 is review and possible approval of revised and land use fee schedule. We are on item number 13.
I make a motion to approve the revised fee schedule.
I have a first by Supervisor Decker to approve the land use fee schedule as revised.
Second.
And a second by Supervisor Dodge. This is why Supervisor Decker always does the first.
Oh yeah, she's good at it.
Well, she's got that microphone on, it's always on.
Any questions by the committee? Youth and Government?
Aye.
Aye.
Committee?
Aye.
Aye.
Chair votes aye. The fee schedule has been approved. There are no certified surveys. Number 15 is the approval of minutes from June 11th and August 14th.
Motion to approve the minutes.
Second.
Our first by Supervisor Underhill and the second by Supervisor Dodge to approve the minutes of both meetings. Youth and Government?
Aye.
Ready?
Aye.
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 Chair votes aye. The minutes have been approved. There are no citizen comments.
Yeah, those two of you, they're pretty sharp, they're quick learners, aren't they?
Move to adjourn.
Second.
Any other business involved by law?
Now we can...
Move to adjourn is in order at any time.
Andy, do you have anything?
Just two things for you, just so you know, the next meeting, there will be two items. One will be the multi-jurisdictional plan report, yearly report, that will come before the committee, and then there is one other item.
Thank you, Andy.
Motion to adjourn.
I have a first by Supervisor Becker, and a second by Supervisor Everfeld, for adjourn. You think everyone?
You think everyone?
You think everyone?
They're apparently busy packing up.
They're packing up.
Aye.
Ready?
Aye.
No.
And nobody gets to leave, because I still have a thing that we need signed for the plan.
No one gets to leave, because Supervisor Spolinski has to sign.
Okay, so you guys...